It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This year, the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism asked thousands of people around the world what sort of news was most important to them. International news crushed celebrity and so-called fun news by a margin of 2-1. Economic, political news finished even higher. Now, that's what people said was most important to them. But what happens when you look at what types of articles people actually consume online? And it's a different story. The basis of a recent article on The Atlantic, in The Atlantic online, and then we'll post that link to our website along with this hour of radio. This hour we want to ask, why do you, as a listener, as a reader, as a viewer, why do we say we want one thing and then demonstrate through our web clicks, our sharing on social media and other measures, that we want something else? Or, to put it another way, is hard news like eating vegetables something you aspire to, something you know is good for you, but all too often a path you don't take? Now, in just a moment, we'll have several media experts join our discussion. But first, Iowa Public Radio producer Lindsay Moon went out to sample some opinion about this topic in Iowa City.
When you go online to look for news, or when you look for news, what sorts of stories are you looking for?
Local current events would probably be my number one. Also world events, and sometimes something as simple as the weather.
I'm usually interested in political or cultural pieces.
I definitely like to get our local news first, just because that's where we're at. But I definitely look for sports news more than I look for anything else, probably, unfortunately. But definitely world news is probably my number three.
Well, I'm looking for local things, Iowa things, and then also with the way the global situation is right now, I guess I'm interested in that too. So,
when you go online and you look for those stories, do you ever find yourself clicking on things that you may not have necessarily intended to in the first place?
Yes, way too much. I don't like to go online because of that. Yeah.
When I look for news, I'll generally look for the main stories, and then it just goes from there, and it could end up anywhere, and it could end up on YouTube watching cat videos within 5 minutes. It's hard to say exactly.
I used to do it a lot more, but recently I've been trying to stop doing that. It just kind of encourages the people who make them. It brings revenue for their sites, and that's not really a good thing in my opinion.
I really start out looking for something specific, and once in a while I will click on something that grabs my attention. I try really hard not to keep up with the Kardashians.
What's the most random rabbit hole that you've been down because of a clickbait story?
Ooh, had to be something with the NSA surveillance, something like with like theories on that, and a lot of spiritual stories.
Silly stuff about celebrities sometimes. A big one was like a cat playing Jenga. Like, that was like a huge one. Like, I saw like 20 or 30 people posting it, and I was like, oh my god, this cat playing Jenga. And I was like, you know, that's actually really cute, but that really doesn't matter. Like, it's not news, you know?
There's so many I can't even think of it. It's just a blur. I can't think of a specific example. There's several every day. It's
15 tips to have a great day. I don't know. Stuff like that. Just like 15 tips.
Iowa Public Radio's Lindsay Moon sampling some opinion about online media consumption in Iowa City. Are the struggles these fellow Iowans familiar are having, or are they familiar to you? You can join our discussion with your experiences this hour, your thoughts, your questions. Tell us, for instance, about a time you went online intending to get a news update and instead found yourself following a rabbit hole to something completely different. And why you think that is? Does it trouble you? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Now, in just a moment, we'll have a few news media experts join us. But first, let's go to Matt Searin. He's Iowa Public Radio's Administrative Services Manager in our Des Moines studio. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Ben.
You are the one who handles web analytics for Iowa Public Radio, and we've asked you for this program to review, half year of analytics, meaning sort of which stories got the most clicks online. And this is differentiated. This is not measuring what people are listening to on our so-called terrestrial signal. This is online activity, right?
Right. So this would be anytime that we have, like today's show, after the show, it'll be posted online and we'll have the web link there. So this would be clicks into that audio, or it'd be into that specific post. And over the past 6 months, we've been keeping an eye on this, watching to see what stories or what types of content really do well in these different areas. It was interesting listening to Lindsay's component, because as I was writing down a lot of statements on local current events, a lot of world news events, weather, political and cultural, and seeing of the past 6 months how that matches up with us. There are some similarities. There's some differences, though, too.
Okay. Well, let's, now that you've told us a little bit about how Iowa Public Radio's analytics work, tell us, what did you find? We have this idea that hard news may be like vegetables. Is that what is that what you found?
I don't know that you can necessarily say that that's a hard and fast rule, but the piece that really kind of stuck out was the local events, or kind of the connectivity. What connects us is Iowa. What's local in Iowa? In April, the very top post we had was Breastfeeding USA, which is on a more national or more broad topic, but it has a specific following, a specific type of people that are interested in that. So they went after that one. We also had Decoding Dyslexia, which would be a little bit more on the hard news, but a special interest as well. In the previous months, we had the Centerville book review that just went crazy because of social media, because it was a local interest piece. It's really, that one would be what we call like a place explainer. It helps us connect in that local area. Those type do really well for us when we can give people the opportunity to identify with Iowa, or we give them that opportunity to identify with where they live. We do have those others that are those special interests that I was talking about, like the Breastfeeding USA, the Decoding Dyslexia. Another special interest type, or a local interest type, would be when Charity reviewed 105 years of Iowa's Drake Relays. That one did really well, too. So it's really those place explainers.
Mm-hmm. And so we can explain this phenomenon also by the way social media works, because we have social media people collect around ideas or common interests. So when you have a special interest story, mm-hmm. That gets shared on various platforms among like-minded people.
Yeah, you can definitely look at that and see what stories do get more social media interaction. And there is, some of these stories do have a lot more that way. And sometimes that's the value of social media, is you have other people out there talking about the work that you're doing. You have other people out there that are sharing it because it's interesting to them. And it's by user interaction and user sharing that you get the interest, as much as if it's kind of the vegetable side, if you wanted to say it that way, as opposed where it's something that it's important to know, but they don't necessarily have much as much interest, or it doesn't necessarily tie directly to them. So there's not that immediacy to it. There's a little more distance there.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us any other things that you found before we say goodbye?
The flip side is, so those are the tops. The bottoms, from what Lindsay's report shared, political and cultural. The cultural I won't really talk about now, but the political actually ends up being one of those lower online interest topics, particularly if it's on a policy issue, or if it's like Politics Day. That's a very dynamic, interactive show on air. But then it kind of lives and breathes on air. But then once it's online, there's not as much interest around there. So that's mm-hmm. that's kind of that vegetable side.
Well, we had recently, we put online, it was a special just online offering of interviews with primary candidates mm-hmm. recently. How did that do?
I'm glad you brought that up, because the other side of that too is there are exceptions. And this one is kind of that exception of it saw a huge spike. We had several thousand people look at that one in a very short amount of time. But the interesting part of that is almost all of those views, almost all of that interaction occurred in the last 24 to 36 hours before the primaries. So it's one where when it becomes important, or when it gets close to the time that you're actually going to be participating in the civic involvement component, that's when you're interested. That's when you're doing the research. You're not looking at it necessarily a week out, 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out, certainly not a month out necessarily. Just that's not as immediate to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Matt Searin, Administrative Services Manager at Iowa Public Radio, giving us some insights into analytics at Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're asking the question, I guess, kind of in a flippant way, is hard news like vegetables? Why do we as listeners, readers, viewers tell us we want, say we want one thing, and then demonstrate through our web clicks, sharing on social media, other measures that We want something else. Joining us for the rest of the hour to continue this discussion, we hope you will as well, 1-866-780-9100. Dennis Chamberlain is with us, associate professor at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. Hi, Ben.
And Frank Durham is with us in our Iowa City studio, associate professor at the University of Iowa School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Welcome back. Hi, Frank. And in our Ames studio, Doug Gentile, associate professor of developmental psychology at Iowa State University. He also runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University. Doug Gentile, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back.
Let's have a little bit to the premise of this show, the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism study there. Dennis, perhaps it's interesting for us to know the difference here between clicking online for a story and the way we used to consume media over the air via television, radio, airwaves, or good old newsprint.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. One of the people who was interviewed on the streets in Iowa City earlier talked about falling down the rabbit hole with clicking one link and leading off to another one. Mm-hmm. And I think that oftentimes what happens with today's media when we're consuming it online is we become distracted and it takes us off into directions where we didn't intend to go. But since it's a click, it's counted as just as important as the first page where we went to. And I'm not sure that's really something that it is as important just because the viewer got distracted.
Mm-hmm. Frank Durham, give us your view, your reaction to this.
Well, I think that the difference is really central. On when we open the Press Citizen or the Gazette or the Des Moines Register, we're faced with content and stories that we didn't necessarily choose. There's no a la carte menu to indicate, as we would on an online form, to tell the New York Times what we want to see in our RSS feed. So the rabbit hole is something we kind of help to construct by narrowing our interests, and often even clicking on a story generates a kind of nanosecond algorithmic response for ads that are going to pop up and may also suggest the content as well.
Mm-hmm. So are we saying the internet is to blame, or has this been around longer than this, Frank Durham?
Well, in 1920, Walter Lippmann was really concerned about the role of journalism as a socializing agent in helping individuals to participate in democracy. And he talked about stereotypes. This is a concept he's associated with. And a similar term is pictures in our heads. He was worried about how we would ever get away from being individuals and become a society based on a common democracy.
Mm-hmm. Walter Lippmann, a man who did a lot of thinking about media and our democracy. Let's go to David in Des Moines. David dialed 1-866-780-9100. You can email us as well, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Hi, David. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah. One of the things that concerns me is how the data is collected. You know, for example, I'm often guilty of consuming junk news or less hard news online. But if I want hard news, I usually don't go online. You know, I listen to the NPR on the radio, or I watch the national newscast or what have you. So maybe I'm just an exception, but I feel like maybe the results are skewed because people might have that kind of behavior.
Mm. Dennis Chamberlain, can you react to that?
Actually, I think I agree with that wholeheartedly. I was thinking about when I consume hard news that I generally am listening to NPR or I'm probably reading some print product. And oftentimes when I'm online, it might be just the update for the World Cup or something that's happening quicker. But I'm not going to find very much local news online. So I think that he has something there where I think that perhaps the information and the data is skewed because of our patterns of where we go for certain types of news.
Well, this Frank, the discussion kind of recalls a theory by a Canadian media theorist, Dallas Smythe, whose idea was that consuming any media content makes us laborers, puts us in the employ of the media companies themselves to keep our eyes in front of this television set to consume ads,
or to read the paper to see the ads themselves. And when he was unaware of the possibility of the internet at the time he was doing his work. But there does seem to be this sort of rabbit hole progression, and it does make us feel, in some sense, taken.
1-866-780-9100, talking today about why people say they want hard news, economics, financial news, international news, and politics. But very often those wants, what they say they want, doesn't match up with what is actually consumed online. 1-866-780-9100. David in Des Moines, thank you for that comment. Let's turn to Doug Dentile. Doug, when you've been on this program before, we've talked a lot about gaming and violence in gaming, and you do a lot of work in that area. Now we have a little bit of a different context here. What does media research say about why people say they want certain things and then demonstrate through their behavior online, in this case, they want something else?
Well, Ben, that's a hard-hitting question, and I'm going to answer it with this cute little picture of my cat.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the next guest.
I think that there are a couple things. First of all, you know, humans are not consistent. That's pretty clear. And what we say we want is usually true, but it's only part of the picture. We want more than one thing. And so you can go on, and I think, you know, this isn't just about the internet. What gets more viewers? Is it, you know, NBC Nightly News or Entertainment Weekly? My guess is it's going to be Entertainment Weekly. Even though we say we want news, well, if there are celebrities up there, we'd rather look at them. And so I think it's not just about online, although I think it's easier to demonstrate online. But I think Frank's comment about we're laborers is also true, and it's true in another way, that when we are consuming, especially hard-hitting news, it takes some work. And one of the things that's true about humans is we want to feel competent. And if you're reading about the situation in Iraq, do we really understand all the factions and all the things that are going on there? And so can we really understand it? It takes work to try to figure out what's really happening. It takes work to figure out whose point of view is being represented and whose isn't. It takes much more work. It's a lot easier to just, go see who's twerking. That I understand, at a much simpler level than I do, world politics.
It's interesting when you make that comment, Doug Dentile, that when I think about my online viewing, when I'm fresh in the morning and, of course, getting ready for work or things like that, trying to get an update on what's happened in the world, in the country, in the state overnight, I'm seeking out that harder news. And then as you follow me through the day and I'm, into the evening, perhaps before I turn off the light to go to sleep, I'm really don't have that agenda, Doug. So I'm out there kind of in that way, almost it is like a diet. That's when also I'm most susceptible to that big bowl of ice cream instead of my vegetables.
Well, I think there's a theory called uses and gratifications that talks about why do we use media the way we do and what are we seeking to gratify. And we have more than one. We do want information, but we also want to relax. We use media as a form of coping. We use it as a form of distraction. We use it as a way to connect with other people. And again, if we put this back into kind of basic human psychology, we have three major needs that we're usually trying to fill with any activity. One is that we want to feel competent. Another is we want to feel like we're in control. And a third is we want to feel connected to people. And when you put those together, it starts making sense. Why is it you would share, a video of a cat playing Django rather than, the latest, assessment of the budget? Well, because more people will comment on it. It makes you, you're giving them something they will like. They'll say, like it on your page. And we feel connected to it. We also feel like we understand it and we're competent. And because we're the ones who were sharing it, we're kind of in control of it.
So, Dennis and Frank, where does this leave us we're in the news media when we hear the context, the different ways in which news media are used, Frank?
Well, it leaves the news media outcompeted by entertainment, by sports, by the sorts of content that can help us relax or can satisfy the other uses and that we might have in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about – couldn't it be simply a case of the treatment of the news? Is there a way that we can deliver the harder issues, the news that is important for us to know in a different way that would make it more consumable?
Well, I mean that's been tried in different contexts, and a lot of people confuse The Daily Show, for example, with a news program when it's really a satire of the way journalism could be produced.
Dennis Chamberlain, your view.
I think actually what we, in as Frank said, that we've also often tried different ways to make the news, hard news, more understandable or more palatable to the audience. And I think, you know, one of the ways it's most successful is when you find a way to make it relevant. And, you know, maybe issues like healthcare, which was in the news for, you know, one of the main subjects for a couple of years, if people didn't understand how it affected them directly, they just tended to tune it out. And that, I think that was one of the challenges. And not very many news organizations did a good job at explaining those issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We want to continue this conversation in just a moment and talk a little bit about the implications that it has for our society at large, for our democracy. We have about a minute before we go get a break. Frank, do you want to give us a little preview because our country, our system of democracy is based on an informed electorate, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it becomes less likely that we would be informed about the same ideas and facts in the same context or frames because we've moved from three networks and up until and through the 80s on television and giving us nightly news and 20-minute segments to the cable and its fragmentation and now the internet. And
so, it used to be we had three networks. We were all on the same page and we had something called the Fairness Doctrine, didn't we?
Until 1987. Mm-hmm. And so there was this notion of fair and balanced reporting on editorial issues and political sensibilities that we have given up. But at this point, there are as many websites as there are stars in the sky.
Okay. We want to come back and continue our discussion about why we say we like hard news. We like to hear about consequential news, news from Iraq, economic news, political news, but often our behavior, especially online, tells us that we go for other things. In other words, is hard news like vegetables? The question for this hour, 1-866-780-9100. Share your experiences, your questions. We'll be back in just a moment with Dennis Chamberlain, Doug Gentile, and Frank Durham, and hopefully your question or comment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This year, the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism asked thousands of people around the world what sort of news was most important to them. They answered international news, of course. It crushed celebrity and fun news by a margin of 2-1. Economic and political news finished very high as well. But this is only what people said. When they actually looked at what people consumed, it was a different story for online articles. And that's the basis of a recent article in The Atlantic Online. We'll post that to our Facebook, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. And we're talking about this idea of hard news possibly being like vegetables, something we aspire to, something we want to have as a part of our life, but very often a path that we don't choose. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. You can, of course, leave a question or a comment on our Facebook page. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Frank Durham is with us, Associate Professor of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. Dennis Chamberlain, Associate Professor in the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University. And Doug Gentile, Associate Professor of Developmental Psychology at Iowa State University. He runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University. Let's talk a little bit more about the implications of this, Frank Durham, because the press is called the Fourth Estate. It was seen by our founding fathers as an essential part of our healthy of a healthy democracy. What are the implications of what we're talking about concerning as concerns our form of government?
Well, in historical terms, I'd mentioned Walter Lippmann earlier. There was a question of political theory, and the principal axis in American political theory is between a concept of one person, one vote, a primitive democracy of, associated with Thomas Jefferson, and the federalism of Alexander Hamilton. And Lippmann was squarely in the camp of Hamilton. He really felt like journalism should be a place that could give us a forum for meeting each other, knowing each other, and doing it in terms of objective fact, that we could know what we were about. I think that what we get in the internet is the kind of crisis of democracy he would describe, where this concept of fluency that came out of the study you mentioned gives us smaller ideas in more specific delivery patterns on the internet, so that we basically know more about less.
Mm. Doug Gentile, does that cross over into your research as well?
Well, to some extent, I think.
The idea of fluency, that we know more about less.
Yeah, and one of the things that's true about humans is we have what's called a confirmation bias, which is we pay more attention to and like ideas that already enhance the ideas we already had. And so we seek out media that fit our political view. We seek out stories that just tend to enhance what we already believed rather than looking for things to challenge us. And so that's where, you know, balanced reporting has taken a big hit, since the end of the Fairness Doctrine to some extent. And we've changed to have more of a media society that's, say, more like Britain, where if you're in London, you know which is the liberal paper, you know which is the conservative paper. And here in the U.S., we now have that too, although we pretend, for example, that they're fair and balanced. But it would be better if we just acknowledged different news sources give different slants on the news, and I'm going to pay attention to the one I like better. And at least you're not fooling yourself at that point.
Mm-hmm. To the point of what you just mentioned, this quote from the Atlantic article, the problem is our brains. And I think before that, they say it's not the internet, it's our brains. The more attention-starved we feel, the more we thirst for stimuli that are familiar. We like ice cream when we're sad, old songs when we're tired, easy lists when we're busy and ego-depleted. The internet shorthand for this fact is cat pictures. Mm-hmm. Psychologists prefer the term fluency. Dennis Chamberlain, your thoughts?
Well, I was thinking about a recent trip I made with students to Europe, where it was a study abroad program, and I was noticing that how they were consuming media, and a lot of it was just to keep themselves occupied. It wasn't that they were searching for anything. Actually, if it was games or if it was like a funny cat video or something on YouTube, that was enough, because they just needed that stimulation of something going on around them because they didn't understand the language. And so they were kind of missing the context of the environment that they were sitting in. So media, I think a lot of times we've actually started to condition the younger generations to use media as an entertainment tool rather than as a source of information or a source to learn about the world around us.
Let's go. Mm-hmm.
Then let me add to this. If we're going to talk about
Doug Gentile.
If we're going to talk about the brain, there are kind of three major regions of the brain. You could think of them as, we have three different types of beings in our brain. We have a reptile, we have a chipmunk, and we have a philosopher. And if we, think about how we access the news, this also helps us understand what we pay attention to. Most of the time during the day, you're like the chipmunk. You're jumping from one thing to another. You're going, oh, look, something shiny. Oh, wait, I've got to run over here. and it takes time to really sit down and be calm till you get to the philosopher, where you can really think about things deeply. And the reptile is just sitting there on the sun, not caring, until something's really dangerous right up in your face. And so if we think about hard news, well, that requires the philosopher brain. That's harder to do. And even if you start there, it's easy to become the chipmunk and go, oh, look, there's a link here about something, shiny. I'm going to click it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, we are constantly shifting between these three kind of parts of our brain, and they're all active at all times. But it's easy to get distracted, and we've largely trained our brains to be more and more distractible with our media multitasking.
Doug Gentile is with us of Iowa State University, Dennis Chamberlain of ISU as well, in our AIM studio, Frank Durham of the University of Iowa. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Wilhelmine is with us in Iowa City as we go to the phones. We have a number of callers. Wilhelmine, hi.
Hi. It scares me to death when I hear people say, oh, I listen to NPR because they always tell the truth. You're unbiased and et cetera, et cetera. If you know a lot about one subject and you compare that to what you're hearing on the radio, I don't have a computer, so I don't go online. I know about as much as there is to know about the Palestine-Israel conflict. And I get that information from a magazine which is dedicated to that. That's the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. And from other periodicals like The Nation, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And comparing that information with what I don't hear mostly, because the Palestinians don't have a voice in this country, I recognize that in other subjects as well, that I don't trust anything that I can't verify.
Okay. Wilhelmine, thank you for sharing with us some of your media habits there. Frank Durham, is that the way most people use the media? We heard Wilhelmine describe her media habit there.
No, it's not, but it sounds good to me. It's being a healthy media consumer means being skeptical. We talk about media literacy, certainly in our classes at the School of Journalism. And I think that the legacy media, the traditional print media that she's referred to, can be a really consistent source of information. The trick is to read across the lines, and that gets back to the philosopher point. It's not in our comfort zones usually to read the counter argument, but if that's what is happening, that's probably ideal.
Let's go to Dave. Dave is calling from Des Moines. Welcome to our program, River to River. Dave, hi.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Ben, it strikes me as I was listening to this conversation about the user habits you were talking about. It kind of mirrors the way an old newspaper of 100, 200 years ago is laid out, and maybe a key for the grail of monetizing online journalism. I am a consumer of serious journalism. But yeah, every once in a while, you know, after I find out about Tammany Hall, then I want to find out how to bake an apple pie. And what I'm looking for is quality. So, you know, when I Yahoo is the largest consumed news service right now on the internet, when I look at that, I have to dig. Maybe I have to go to Mother Jones or The Nation or somewhere else for a hard-hitting story about something I'm interested in. I think the secret would be to kind of ape or mirror the old journalistic style. Just do it with incredible integrity and consistency.
Okay, Dennis Chamberlain, talk about the ideas that Dave has raised there in Des Moines.
Actually, I think that's a really good idea. And some news organizations are trying to put more focus on quality reporting. And even though it doesn't seem to be a good profit center at the moment, I think in the long run it may be the right direction to head. When everything turned upside down in these past few years with legacy media and print circulation dying, a lot of newspapers or news organizations responded by cutting the actual reporting staffs and the people who provide the content. And then the result was it just got a deeper and deeper spiral as there was fewer local stories in your local newspaper, and they were relying on wire service, stuff that you could get for free on the internet anyway. So I think that the best solution is going to be for places to focus, you know, like a site like Mother Jones, which really puts a lot of emphasis on serious investigative reporting.
Does that but can you recall a case of serious, perhaps award-winning journalism that doesn't get noticed very much?
Probably quite a few that don't get noticed very much. Most of the stuff that does seem to get noticed is celebrity related, something that's fun, something that's easy. I'm trying to think. there's been some really good reporting that's been done, say, at local levels down in New Orleans when they were about the aftermath of Katrina and so forth. And I think nationwide it didn't get noticed, but it won Edward R. Murrow Awards and Pulitzer Prizes. But yet nationwide it just kind of, even though people could access it through the internet, it's not the kind of thing that people wanted to seek out.
Dennis Chamberlain is with us, a professor of journalism at Iowa State University, along with Doug Gentile of ISU and Frank Durham of the University of Iowa. Let's go back to our phones. Alan is with us in Des Moines. I hope we can understand you, Alan. Sounds like some background noise there, but go ahead, speak up. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, tell me if you can, and we could just skip the call.
No, you're fine. You're good, Alan. Go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering how your guests would define hard news, because I ask myself, why do I read the news or listen to the news? And it's in order to form an opinion, in order to get a perspective that's that makes sense. And the situations that we face, I mean, take Iraq, for example, are so complicated that it's impossible to form a point of view without meeting opinion makers whom I trust to put things together, to help me put things together. And so what I get from the newspaper and sometimes NPR are just kind of headline ideas of what's going on, but mainly what national leaders on one side or the other think about it, what they say about it. And so I look to opinion makers to help me understand. So I'm wondering how your guests would define hard news and what they think the relationship is between hard news and trusted opinion makers who help us make sense out of it.
Frank Durham, do you want to tackle that from Alan in Des Moines?
Sure. Well, I think hard news appeals to the range of sort of implicit news values that journalists at least bear in mind about the impact, the number of people affected by a story, about the geographical range of a story, whether it's international, national, or local, about the prominence of people involved in it and other factors like that. I recognize that the caller makes a point about opinion leaders, and there are often elite voices in these stories. And journalism is not easy. I don't think we should say that. But sourcing really matters. And one of the pitfalls of contemporary journalism is overprivileging elite sources at the expense of finding out what the story is about from someone who lives at the scene, who's a citizen of the...
Too many talking heads is what you're saying.
Too many talking heads or in the case of what William Bennett at the University of Washington calls indexing, which is relying almost exclusively or exclusively on the government source at the expense of other people who could flesh out the story. So what we're ideally getting is a kind of holism. The remedy for that is to read around, to watch around, to listen around, and to take in the varied menu, the varied diet of news that we would describe as media literacy.
Let's go to Craig. Craig is with us in Davenport after we thank Alan in Des Moines for calling in. Craig, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How you doing?
Thanks
doing
fine.
For taking my call.
Sure thing.
Alan actually touched on something that I wanted to preface first in terms of the hard news versus, you know, an opinion versus just regular news. One of the things that I've been finding myself, you know, doing over the last few years is really getting rid of the MSNBCs, the Fox News, even Mother Jones and some other things that I used to read, just for the sheer fact that the normative content that is put out using moral or ethical language on the offset really sets the tone. And again, referencing what Alan said, you know, kind of creates that bud of an opinion for you, even before you even read the story. And so I'm wondering if, you know, the distinction when we look to judge a piece of news or describe a piece of news, if we've gotten to a point in our society where we need that normative project before we attempt to look at it analytically, like what is the news? What is the story? What are the facts? You know, how much of a normative concept do we need to make understanding for the analytical facts, which I think is kind of backwards.
Mm. Dennis Chamberlain, a comment on that comment?
Well, I was thinking that something that Frank said earlier about needing a varied diet, I think that's one of the important things so that we can make our own judgments. And I also, I agree with what Craig's mentioning that sometimes, you know, even if it is a certain publication that you used to read, you realize that they're kind of forming that opinion for you. And but if we actually look broader, I mean, one of the great things of the internet was that we were going to have access to the world. But I work with students and I ask them how many read or look towards international news sites, whether it's Al Jazeera English or whether something in the UK or in Germany, France, to look for sources of news to get a different perspective. And none of them do, because it's always we go to the same places that we're used to going to here. We're like, we have these patterns. If we go to CNN for our broadcasts, we go to CNN.com for our internet news.
Mm, Frank?
Ours don't either here at the University of Iowa School of Journalism. It's not to knock them. The Pew Center Project for Excellence in Journalism produces polls showing the demographic spread of the demographic definition of who's really interested in hard news. And 18 to 24-year-olds really, really aren't. And I think it's a cultural moment that's promoted at least by the surfeit of non-news content on the internet.
Mm-hmm. So are news organizations placing too much emphasis on the internet?
Well, they're kind of forced to. I mean, last week in the New York Times, the public editor devoted her column to an explanation of how the Times is really considering shedding the expense of the traditional newspaper model and going to publishing once a week in a digital format only. So the business side of the news really has a lot to do with this.
Mm-hmm. The Snowfall Project is something I'd like to have you mention before we go, Dennis Chamberlain, because on this point it's really instructive, isn't it?
Yeah, the Snowfall Project was this gorgeous multimedia interactive piece that the New York Times published, I think it was about a year and a half ago, and they won a Pulitzer Prize for that coverage. And it was quite expansive. It also was in the Sunday newspaper as a special section, full broadsheet. And a lot of people, I think, in the journalism, in American journalism, were looking toward that as one of the possible future directions that we could be headed. But I talked with some people who were working on that project, and they actually said when they looked at the analytics, a very, very small portion of the audience actually made their way through it. They would get distracted about halfway through. And even though it was award-winning, fantastic piece of journalism by some standards, the audience wasn't able to work their way through the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And I admitted to her that I didn't either. I made it through the print version, but not through the electronic. It was just too many distractions.
Doug Gentile, before we go, we've got about a minute left. You have some thoughts, I'm sure, to share and conclude this conversation.
Well, I have one question, actually, for our journalists here, which is if what we're saying is getting a diversity of views is really important, especially for our democracy, when five companies own 85% of all the media in the U.S., how diverse can it be? And where do we actually get that? You know, if we recognize that every media outlet has a point of view and isn't telling you some part of the story, how do you get the parts that aren't there?
Answers?
It's a wonderful rhetorical question.
it wasn't meant to be rhetorical.
Well, actually, I think looking internationally, because I spent most of my professional career working abroad, and when I came back to the States, it seems to me that it doesn't matter which publication you're looking at. They're all pretty much the same idea. And you're right. If you told me that all the media was owned by two companies, it would be easy to believe, too.
Okay. Dennis Chamberlain, associate professor in the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University. Doug Gentile, associate professor of developmental psychology at Iowa State University. He runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University. Frank Durham, Associate Professor of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. Thanks also to the listeners who chimed in on our topic today. Doug, Dennis, Frank, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on our program, Politics Day, the states across the U.S. hold a final round of primary elections. That is until August, and we'll look at Iowa's November matchups now that they're finally set tomorrow on the program. Lindsay Moon and Emily Woodbury, our producers, our executive producer, Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.